Into the final moments, Alex Payne trying to keep this side going forward. Haskell takes it on now with just relentless chat, largely about himself. And there's Tindall to add the finishing touch of glamour and World Cup winning stories and a slightly sideways nose. That is how you podcast. A dominant display by the good, the bad and the rugby.
Hello, Dream Team. Welcome along to the 2023 Six Nations preview. It's a World Cup year. It feels like the stakes have been raised. There is a lot riding on the next few weeks, and we have got some legends of the game alongside to look at all that is to come. Borthwick and Gatland back just in time. Will they make the difference? We shall discuss. And luckily this week, it is not just Hask and Tins. Welcome to both of you. Nevertheless, we've got a little bit of help alongside. The dear Fox is up from Wears. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
You were meant to be on holiday.
Nosebleed when you walked out.
Yeah.
I came out on a rash when I got off the train.
Did you?
Yeah.
Looking good on it. You're meant to be on holiday this week. Where were you meant to be?
We were looking at going to Bacalar, which is Mexico.
You travel hard.
Boy, he's been on holiday a lot recently. Well, how many places have you been to recently? There's a lot.
Canada.
Palma, yeah. Copenhagen, Miami. Take advantage when you got time off.
Yeah. I was watching a documentary on extreme travellers. Maybe that could be your new thing, post-career.
Yeah, I could reboot Wish We Were Here, I reckon. I'll do that one, is it?
I get involved in that. Have you ever seen that place in the sun where you can get a house in Spain for like 50 grand?
No, too much.
Welcome along to our Six Nations preview. Lovely to have you with us. Thankfully, Jordan Murphy is alongside as well to bring a bit of class to proceedings. I'm going to read, I didn't realise all of this.
Bring
you've
a lot
got
of
a
hair.
Bit of it. Shush, Hask. The most decorated player in Premiership history with 8 titles. 7 more than you. 2 Heineken Cups. 2009 Six Nations Grand Slam. 7 appearances for the Lions and 72 caps for his country. Former Leicester coach and director of rugby. And interestingly, can you remember what you were doing last time you were on the show?
No.
Apparently you were in hospital because you were about to welcome a new baby.
That's true.
I'd completely forgotten that.
I was just saying it's 3 days older than Lucas.
Is that right?
Yeah, was I in hospital or was I on the way to hospital?
Were you on the way to hospital?
On the way to hospital was even more professional. Yeah. What, love, keep it down, keep the screams to breathe. Their surge is not contractions, calm down.
Driving as well.
All right?
All good, little girl. Good. Was born a couple of days later and I am
good. Right, away we go. We're going to work our way up from the bottom to the top of last year's table, Italy, Wales, Scotland, England, Ireland, France, to try and nail down what we think will be happening, what we should be watching out for, and sort of trends and, I suppose, ideas about what might well happen over the next 6 weeks of action. So we're going to start with the big dogs of Italy. 6th in last year's Six Nations. Head coach Kieran Crowley, former All Black, of course. Captain Michele Lamro. And the ones to watch that we've picked out, Ange Capuzzo and Eduardo Padovani. 12th in the world right now. Lord, would you like to lead us off? Is this the year that Italy fire some big old shots? Or is the gap still a little difficult?
No, I generally think the gap has closed a little bit. The problem is the nuts and bolts, I've said, for Italy for the last 2 years. I think they've got attacking threats through the team. Obviously, we saw that last-minute try to down Wales. Foxy was very, very quick to say that he wasn't playing in that game.
Nor the Georgia one as well, actually. We should stipulate that as well.
Just stating facts.
You know, and I think they have the ability to score tries. I think that they are leaky in terms of they're risking it all, is what I would say. They're playing from deep. They could do with just managing the game a bit better, but they're sticking to their brand and how they want to try and play, and I sort of support that. I think they're fun to watch. They obviously beat Samoa in the autumn, and they beat Australia. You know, then they got hammered by South Africa. But I think they are 12th in the world, so you can't expect them to really go out there and win games. I think what they've done is try and spice it up with what the type of rugby that they play and at least make games entertaining. They got their first win in, 7 years last year against Wales. Their job is to go get 2, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's the important thing to remember. Is, and this time last year, people were campaigning for them to be kicked out of the Six Nations.
Yeah.
It was actually a genuine debate on whether or not, you know, them losing consistently was going to be good enough. And I think, you know, that win against Wales. Sorry, Fox.
I wasn't playing.
that was enough almost for people to say, actually, hold on, they have got something to offer. I don't think they'll finish any higher than last place again this year.
Really?
But what we're saying is, you know, they can go out and they can win a game on their day. And I think the gap is closing and they are getting more competitive. They have been great for the Six Nations. Everyone loves a trip to Rome. All the players, all the supporters love a trip to Rome. And I think that's a great thing. the gap is closing, but is it quick enough? For me, no. Again, I don't think they have the players to manage a game. So, you know, they can, if they're in a game 60, 70 minutes, they can be competitive and they can pull something out of nothing. But how often are they in Six Nations games at 60, 70 minutes? It's pretty rare. So I expect them to be last again.
Yeah. That win against Wales.
Which I wasn't playing. Yeah.
Can we just confirm you weren't playing?
I was not playing against Italy last season.
But that win against Wales. I mean, and I suppose if you couple that with, I mean, they went well against Samoa. They snuck a tight one against Australia, and then they got battered against South Africa. I mean, it's still a little bit up and down. It fluctuates quite a bit. But are you seeing, or where are you seeing genuine progress?
I think you're seeing growth in their performances, and I think what might go against them is that they've gained more respect from the other countries, and they might be more attention to detail when they go up against them and realize that they do pose threats. And instead of thinking, being like, right, it's just about us this week, we're playing Italy, if we worry about ourselves, oh, we'll get the result. But you have to give them, they have credible, genuine threats with ball in hand, and you got to pay them a bit of respect. So I think they're going to get more attention, which might be to their detriment, really.
I'm right in saying that the England-Italy game, what was that? What was their tactic where you basically look utterly clueless into the ref cam?
No, I
what
do,
is it I'm trying
no,
to do?
I'm not having that shit. I've explained it a million times.
You can explain it, but you still look clueless into the referees.
I know, it's because...
That was his look.
No, yeah. What's my look anyway? Right?
What is it I'm meant to be doing, okay, ref?
No, I asked what a breakdown, what he meant by a breakdown.
Which one am I meant to be facing?
First of all, when you deal with international referees, and this goes to any of the fans out there, is that we have meetings upon referees,
don't get
right?
Cross about
no, but
it.
It's important they know this.
Okay.
We actually have meetings upon referees, and we analyse what the referee does. So when a team has, say, Nigel Owens, when he was refereeing, and he cards you on loads of things, and there are stuff that you knew he was going to do, that's shame on you as a team. You're like, you knew Nigel was going to do that, why'd you play into it? Only difficulty is when you do analysis of a referee and you say he always favours the attacking side and he suddenly starts giving penalties away against the attacking side for doing the same thing he was rewarding the last eight games, that's when you lose the plot. When Italy did that at the breakdown, right, no one had ever seen it before. The referee had never... Fuck you, Alex.
Can someone get a net? Because I think we've got a bite.
No, you have got a big bite, right? I want to clear up. I'll tell you why. Whoever's in charge of the Six Nations social media, every time this year, just puts that video up and people go, oh, you don't know what you're talking about, right? And then running, and then Owen kicking the ball in the back of the head. Fuck off,
you've
right?
You've gone red. You're puce. I can't breathe.
Let me finish.
You look like your dad after a few
beers. Let me land. I basically, I asked the referee, because when you do the analysis, the referee says in his own words, I want to see good pictures. I want to see good pictures. Mm. So I asked him, what does he want to see? What did he see as a breakdown? And he's like, I'm not your coach. I'm the referee. And I was like, well, I wanted to say, listen, man, I'm not a fucking referee, but I do a better job than you. Mm. You can't do that because you get yellow cards. You can't be rude to them.
It's the first time I've seen Hask ask to land. Normally he's saying, please let me fly. But I was just to sort of support him. The cheeky thing about that is Ugo knew about it before the game.
Because Connor had prepped him.
Connor has to have that conversation with the referee. So the referee knows it's coming. So he already knows, he's done his study on what the law is and how he's got to allow it to play. Cheeky, because then obviously you don't pass that on to the opposition, when really if you're going to do it, you know, you still could have caught them out if they haven't prepared properly. But
also catch us out and then go, what, I don't understand, what is it you're refereeing here, because we'd never seen it before, like, no. You're, you know,
all right,
no, people aren't bound on it. Was very slow to pick
no
up on it
line.
But until the coaches, you know, all the coaches in the box, you know, were very quiet about what was going on. You know what I mean? You know, I don't know who was it who was coaching at the time.
Player power, though,
John
it? Player
Lancaster.
No, it wasn't. It was Eddie.
Oh,
came
Eddie,
down
fine.
Afterwards and he said, oh, don't like that, do you? Yeah. Go against the old golden one.
No, fine. Eddie, fuck you, Eddie. You know, now in Australia. Never liked you anyway, traitorous bastard. My point about that is that I was trying to ask the right question. Italy have gone from needing to do stuff like that to actually a real credible side. And I think that's the difference now. They're playing exciting rugby, whereas before, you could never fault their passion. And I think it's very hard for a lot of the Italian players, because sometimes they've been seen as the laughing stock. You know, what Geordie said is right. You know, there was debate whether you should put them in and George. I think people are very disrespectful of Italy, when actually now they're credible across the line. They're playing some incredible rugby. They've got some players that can unlock defences. They've got some forwards, you know, with Pledri coming back in. You know, they've got some really good guys that do some damage, and I think they're much more consistent. Now, do they have the ability to last the whole game? I'm not sure. Are they going out on their sword? You know, die on their shield? Yeah, 100%. Is it good for the Six Nations? Absolutely. Am I excited when I see Italy play? Yeah, and I think now they've got the ability to match. Instead of having like a talismanic talent like Sergio Parisse, and he was the only one, or Bergamasco or whatever.
Castro.
They've now got 8 or 9 players like that that can really, really build a game. And I'm very excited. And it would be a shame if they do finish bottom, because I'd rather watch them play than some of the teams play.
You've made a very good point, actually, James, which is a rarity when we're talking about rugby. But you actually, the squad for Italy, you can pick out some proper players in there now. Lamoro, Negri, I'm going to chuck in Pelledri. You're looking at Fischetti,
Garbisi.
So pick us one then that you are really excited about seeing.
Well, for me, I said Garbisi. I think, you know, he him pulling the strings, I think when he goes well, he plays with a confidence, he plays with a passion. You know, you saw when he got the games against Australia, when he got the games against Wales, just really wears it. Now, before, their emotion was disruptive, doing stupid stuff at the breakdown, causing penalty plays at the odd times, flying to the side. They used to be disruptive. Now they're quality. Now their passion's focused in the right direction because they've got good players around them. And he epitomises that for me. And I think Italy are credible.
Geordie.
I like the back row boys when they play well. I like Garbisi. I think he's obviously a very young guy, and he's actually come on a lot in the last years. But back rows Negri, Pelledri, I think they've got some real firepower to carry there. And that's what they need to do in order to win these big games. They need to get go forward ball.
Tins?
There's quality in the back line as well. Obviously, we talked about Capizzo and Padovani, but then you've got the more established ones like Marezzi. Obviously, my man crush of Zanon's not in there. Is he injured? But there you go.
Must be injured because he was next level.
He was. He's been fantastic when they haven't had players. Now they've got players. He's not around. But you've got Tommaso Allan. You've got people who we know as well from the Premiership. So there's enough in there. Again, we're talking, as Jordan just said, we're not expecting anything of them. But as long as they go out there and try and entertain, I think that's what they've got to do and make the games entertaining whilst not getting hammered.
I think Brex is the 13 who plays a lot for them. Like he does a lot of good work in defence, and he's like a bit like the glue with their back line. I think a lot of the moves go through him, and he seems to facilitate like the talent he has around him.
A bit like when you used to play for Wales, wasn't it? You were described as the glue. Something that
we missed scrum cap as well.
Yeah. You were a scrum cap. Who's the glue? Who's dynamic leader in defence? Added a bit of attacking flair.
Yeah, Warren, you listen.
We'll clip this up and send it over.
Decided to give
Wales
it up.
Online.
For,
Wales online.
Decided to give it up Davies for writing holiday pieces.
Were you at Wasps with Menozzi?
No.
Was Menozzi at Wasps?
Yes.
He wasn't, but he'd left by then. So we're all comfortable that Italy coming, making great progress, but not going to necessarily get off sixth.
No, I've got a bit more confidence in that. I think they do, yeah. I think
who are they going to beat?
I think that,
they're going to beat.
Don't ask him to back it up or substantiate it. Just let him throw out wild claims.
Do you know what? Not enough people like me anyway. I don't need to be hated anymore, but, you know. Not a million miles away from where I'm sitting, they might get beaten. And so people that misrepresent
them. Obviously, they've got Wales in Italy, they'll be targeting that. I'm not sure where they're playing, Scotland. Scotland's at Murrayfield, so they'll probably just be targeting that Wales. But then I think they'll go and try and put their stamp. They'll try and play fast tempo. They try to play offload. Sometimes it doesn't work for them. I think if Garbisi and Varney can manage the game better, manage their exits, that's where they've been poor over sort of the last year, is the simplicity of exits. You've got to get that right. If they can do that, and then they can get that attacking flair offloading game, then who knows?
Oh, and I'm DJing at halftime, England versus Italy at Twickenham. So if anything is destined for me to cause some real negativity and blow the whole place up and for everything to go horrifically wrong, you know that I'll be the game where I DJ where England lost to Ireland. I mean, England lost to Italy. That'll be the next thing.
God help us all.
Haskell
to blame.
Haskell to blame for England shambles.
He played a Maury.
Right, should we move on to Wales? Fifth in last year's Six Nations, ranked 9th in the world. Welcome back, Warren Gatland, on another bumper deal. Wayne Pivac has vacated the hot seat. Interestingly, this week, Gats has had a lot to say about the Netflix deal. He's worried about players and coaches suffering reputational damage in quest for drama, according to Telegraph. What goes on in the Wales team room with Gatland at the helm? Are we allowed to confer any of this?
Oh, look, I have heard nothing about this Netflix documentary.
Right.
I know there's something recorded.
So there are cameras in every team following every move with the idea that they're going to, like Drive to Survive and Breakpoint. You're not looking very convinced by it.
Yeah, but my question would be, have any of those documentaries, has anyone come out of it horrendously badly? Or do they not show people in the best light? The Pep documentary came across as you know, he screams and shouts.
Yeah.
I think all the bosses from F1 have come across. Anyone's watched Breakpoint?
I think it's a little bit different when you're Man City, though. As in, I know for a fact when I was in charge at Leicester, there was a lot of documentary crews circling around when we were under the pump going, yeah, we'd really like to stick some cameras in the corners here. Yeah. And it was the type of thing that was going, actually, seats. You know what? Things are going particularly badly. I'm not sure they can get much worse, but if you stick some cameras in the corner, I'm pretty sure it's going to pick up some pretty negative things.
Right.
So do you empathize
with Warren then?
Massively so. So I was saying, I don't think he's obviously agreed this Netflix deal, and yeah. then he's been told, right, we need the money. We're going to bang a load of cameras in the corner and just act naturally.
Right.
And as you well know, it's not always that easy when you stick cameras in front of your face 24/7. It can be difficult. I'm sure he wants to have conversations. He's going to have some really, really tough conversations. He needs to change things really, really quickly. Obviously, he's got a huge amount of respect across the world of rugby, but he's coming back into a really damaged place, is my opinion. And there's a huge expectation in Wales, and the club rugby hasn't been fantastic. I know there's some great players who he can bring in, but from my point of view, I wouldn't want to have those conversations with cameras all over and sort of being in that situation.
I would say on this, I don't think it's not there for there's no cash. We all know that, you know, the first season of any of
exposure
of these,
play
it's
isn't
an
it?
Exposure play for rugby. So the exposure is not to make rugby look stupid. That can't be what Netflix is there for. It's there. Six Nations wouldn't have done it if it wasn't to drive awareness of actually how much hard work the boys put in, what the pressures are like at Six Nations. Test match rugby is about winning fundamentally. So there are going to be tough conversations, but it comes down to how they edit it. And I don't believe that the Six Nations would have signed to a deal where they're going to go in and every time someone's getting berated or someone's bollocking someone, it's going to be shown. It's going to be more about the individuals, the players, actually awareness of those players and the positivity around how much people work, what their personal backgrounds are.
But equally, if you're a producer and you've got England versus, or so Ireland, Wales, very first game, and by chance Ireland win the game, last minute drop goal, there's devastation, there's disappointment, there's upset in that Welsh changing room. Do you want that shown? Because they're not going to go, oh, this is fantastic stuff, we're not going to show it. Like, does he have any control over what's shown?
Yeah, I don't know. I assume Six Nations will, so they'll still get the... They'll get the final say on. I don't know. But
I'm not sure.
I think Netflix
and their documentaries. Well,
we talk about this though all the time about how do we grow the game? How do we showcase what we are?
You've got to
showcase how much the boys hurt.
I think as well. Bear in mind, a lot of people in rugby are not used to this level of production, of scrutiny, of intimacy, and someone like Warren Gatland and all his coaching would never have experienced anything like this.
Well, Lions documentaries, no,
they
are, done, but
even
they
then
do get sign off.
Do get sign off. It's quite controlled. I actually think this is the best thing for rugby. I do think it's going to probably have some negativity. I think what's going to happen is, for example, say Warren, you know, or any of the coaches gets caught having it dressing down a player or a player's doing something inappropriate or whatever, and goes, I don't want to show that. Stop filming. It's like you can't. Yeah. And I think that will be the interesting point, because actually with a lot of these footballers, they're used to kind of scrutiny. A lot of these teams have cameras in the change rooms. A lot of these teams have that level of scrutiny. Rugby players have never done anything like this. Rugby's never had... Most of the content rugby teams and companies produce is pretty awful. So I think this will be a very interesting thing for them. And I think Gats and these guys are going to have to learn pretty quickly that this is the way the world works now, and that you can't protect it. You've got to be on. And I think a bit of jeopardy, a bit of emotion. I think, unfortunately, it's always sad that you have to be the first cab off the rank, as this Six Nations will be. But two or three years down the line, I think this will be commonplace.
I think Gats is an old school coach.
Yeah.
He's an old school rugby man who would rather do things his way. Foxy, you know him better than anyone. You're probably best to comment on it.
I think just reading here now, the quest for drama, what Gats might be alluding to is that there was the huge allegations that came out at the start of a Six Nations campaign last week, and what's the narrative of this Netflix documentary? Are they going to say, right, Welsh rugby in turmoil, serious allegations or whatnot, or is it concentrate on the rugby and what the boys actually do in the working week and their prep for test match rugby? So I think that might be his concern. If Gats doesn't have control on it, he might be worried about that.
But I think it would be much more about the players. Because look, what sells, what fans want to know about, from far as I can see, is what, you know, what do the players do? What is the emotion? What's the interaction? What are players actually like? What are they doing in the week that we don't know about?
What are their characters like? What are their background stories? What, you know, what makes your favourite players tick?
I just don't think what rugby will be used to, or these coaches will be used to, Jordy's right, there's old school mentality, is having intrusive stuff that you then don't control, because the camera's always rolling. Now, look, there is no benefit in Netflix blowing up the whole thing because they don't do it on any other show, but will they show, you know, a coach shouting at a player? Yes. Will they show the emotion of a player coming in and kicking a ball bottle and having a fucking rap? Of course they will, because that's life. I think in terms of where they delve into stuff, you know, things like all that other stuff, that's a murky legal thing you can't even delve into. Do you know what I mean? And so you sort of want to shy away pretty heavily.
And it's got
nothing
to do with the competition. No. It is. That's something behind that. I just think it'll be interesting to say over or control over.
I just think it'll be surprising when you see the way, you know, people could get dressed down, or the analysis in a week, or someone like, say for example, Sean's gonna be with France, you know, kicking tables over. No, he doesn't all the time, but like kicking the tables over and going, blackout, you know, mate, blackout, whatever, you know. I think for me that'll be interesting to see. Now that would go on, whereas normally you go, listen, can you turn the cameras off now? I want to say to Foxy, he's not in the mix, I've lost his phone number, please retire, never come back to Wales, fuck off to Benidorm permanently.
He's part of our crew now.
Now he's going to have to say that, you know, in front of camera.
Let me just put a bit of detail on this, because we've all alluded to, I'm just going to put, for those who don't know, so a BBC Wales Investigates programme raised allegations of misogyny, sexism and racism in Welsh rugby's governing body. As a result, the WRU chief exec Steve Phillips has resigned. Performance director Nigel Walker will take over as acting CEO with immediate effect while the WRU search for Phillips' permanent successor. And on Scrum 5 this week, Walker said, we described the allegations raised in the documentary as harrowing and despicable. He said the tone of the Welsh Rugby Union today is one of contrition, remorse and apology to those employees who went through what they went through and a desire to get things right. Was this news to you? Did you ever have, like, I mean, I know you're a player, but, you know, you're obviously quite a senior Welsh legend. I'm not suggesting for a moment you were ever part of it, but did you ever hear people complaining or...
Ken Owens will be able to answer this question. He put his blazer on and
he's on board meetings and everything. Look, I think I wasn't aware of any of this, and obviously these allegations are extremely serious, and like the tone of the union now seems that they're doing right by these allegations, doing a formal investigation from an external company. It's not a good look at all, and you know, you just hope that the correct procedures are done. But me personally, I've never experienced or heard of anything really.
How distracting do you think it is? Or is there so much noise in Welsh rugby at the moment, it's just another sort of drumbeat?
I think in the past Six Nations you've been involved in, like the year we won in 2019, the week of the Scotland game, there was talks of mergers going on and boys being shipped up to North Wales to play. You know, GATS will be making sure that the boys focusing on that, not what's going on around, because you'd hope that the right things are being done externally.
I think if anything, it actually makes Wales more dangerous. The playing group, obviously, you know, there's turmoil and all those allegations. We want to see them investigate. And I think, you know, the world today, and particularly rugby, probably needs to investigate those areas. But there's been so much noise, so many different drumbeats going on in Wales, that I think Warren, knowing Warren, he will circle the wagons and he will go, listen, our opportunity is to focus on rugby and the performance on the field. Mm. And there can be distractions, and there will be distractions going forward. But we have a chance actually to really instill some pride for the Welsh rugby community. You know, I think Wales across the board for me over the last, well, as long as I can remember, probably have been the team that have overperformed really. Yeah. You know, every year when we've gone in and said, oh, you know, they're really struggling and they haven't got the players, you go to the Millennium Stadium, you get 80,000 avid Welsh fans singing that anthem, and it makes the hairs on your neck stand, and the players perform and they improve on the back of the way that they are supported, in my belief. So I think they're probably in a more dangerous position.
Let's hope, as you say, that is sorted out. Just coming to you, Tins, on, I suppose, the job for Warren Gatland. So 9 losses in 12 last year. They got pulled all over the place a bit during the autumn. Lost to Australia 39-34, lost to Georgia 13-12, then snuck home against Argentina by 7 before, I suppose, getting put away by the All Blacks. So Gatland comes back in, 9 defeats in 12. Look at the squad that he's named. Obviously, the background noise we've discussed. Where do you start? What are the three things he's going to do to get this Wales side up again?
Well, luckily he knows, I think, well, one of the downsides to it is there isn't much player turnover in terms of new players coming in. There's a lot of, you go through that squad, there's a lot of names he will have worked with for God knows how many years. I mean, it's great to see Alan Wynne-Jones coming back at 72 years old for another for his 50th Six Nations.
17th Six Nations.
Is that what it is?
17th Six Nations.
I mean, you caught up with him recently. I mean, how the hell is he finding the energy and enthusiasm to do it after 17 years, let alone the ability?
Yeah, I don't know. 17 Six Nations. That's just amazing.
He's probably not off to Copenhagen and Dubai.
He's got the candle of both heads.
I think he's going to be relying heavily on Christ. Christ
Does the Lord play a big role in the game? Yeah, the Lord plays a very big role.
He's that desperate he's put someone in called Christ. I think it's going to be hard for them. They're low on morale, I would imagine. Not great on form. But, you know, Gats is proven that he can turn things around. And, he will know the players he's working with. There are a couple of new names in there. But I'm not going to say it's Warren Ball. But you're going to get something that's quite simple. Allows the boys to just probably set piece, win their physicality, and then see what they can get off the back of it.
I think concerningly for him is he hasn't been given the free rein that he would have liked. He hasn't been allowed to bring all the coaches that he would have liked, and he hasn't been given the carte blanche that he would have liked. So I certainly think he's being hamstrung to a certain extent, and all the drama in around WRU is certainly not helping him either. He will definitely have an effect. It's just whether or not he can get it done quickly enough.
Well, one thing Gats always makes the boys feel like they can, go out there and beat anyone. I remember my first autumn in 2010, we were playing New Zealand, and he goes, team meeting before you go on the bus. Boys, just think a half past five. People would be saying in the pubs, Wales beat the All Blacks. Let's go. I thought I was going to beat the All Blacks. We lost by 20, yes. But like, I had that feeling.
For a moment, I thought,
he'll give those boys confidence, and I see them emphasizing on the kicking game, and they'll probably go down emphasizing on their physicality and defense to restrict. I think you can get most gain when you change your coach and set up from your defense. And I think they'll probably pick accordingly. I think there'll be more safer aerial game and tactical like that.
Three away games doesn't help them either. No. Let's be honest. Oh. It's a tough. They've got France away. They've got Ireland.
Scotland away.
Blues away. Scotland and Italy away.
Yeah,
I would say this. So when I was on the Lions tour 2017, right, one of the things that I really took away from that tour was just how good the Welsh players were as individuals. You know, like I obviously knew Wales were good, but I think sometimes with the way they wanted to play and the stuff that was going, on and the kind of the type of coaches they had, ironically, it was Gats. I thought that, yes, he got the best out, and they often beat people in the big games. But actually, some of them as individuals were incredible. And I think the one thing that's been talked down about this squad, when actually, if they're wound up and put in the right direction, there's some very, very, very good players in here that, maybe haven't had the framework, maybe haven't had the confidence, maybe haven't been given the free rein to go out and perform. And so actually, I think it's a big, a lot of people underestimating this Wales squad. When actually you look at it, there's some pretty great players in there. And actually, I think with the right coaching, hopefully with some renewed confidence, they can actually go and do a job. I really would be much more positive about it. I know there's some old heads, and I think that is a problem. There is some maturity there. But actually, some of these guys, probably haven't performed as well as they could do. But when they do play for their clubs, mate, they're next level. Like, I was very, very surprised just how good the individual Welsh players were.
It's quite easy to give them a good siege mentality this time.
Yeah.
Everything's coming at us. We've got three away games. We've got our number one in the world at home.
Union in disarray.
Everyone's expecting us to fail and see what the players are made of.
Pick me someone then who needs a really big campaign.
I mean, Alan Jones, I think, probably does. If he wants to carry on going to the World Cup, I think there's a legacy there that, he's talked about for a while. Has he played that well in the last few games? There was obviously talk about whether he was the right man for the job. Was he holding other players back? I think he will want to go big. I think he needs to do that. I think for his own sort of mentality, because you never want to be a player. And he said it in his own terms when we interviewed him down in Wales. He wants to be there on merit. He's someone that drives standards. So I think for me, I really want to see him stand up and actually make a profound difference. He discovered a new type of play under your man, with the offloading game. I think
Pivac,
we need to now go back to, getting that balance right between him, carrying well and also, offering that real physicality and destructive defence.
I think whoever plays 10, if it's Dan Bigger, I think he needs a massive tournament. Being able to move them around the field, really could sort of get that control back that we know that Dan Bigger can do when he's all singing. And if he can boss them around the field, we know how good a load of their players are, whether it be Josh Adams, whether it be George North, whether, you know, Liam Williams, whoever it might be, you know, obviously Lewis Rees-Zammit's out for maybe until round three or something. You know, they've got the players that they can, as Haas just said, that they can play. And I think you just need someone who's pulling that together, and that's going to be the that 9-10 link.
Who do you look at, Jordan, when you look at the squad list and think that is the person to take this team by the scruff of the neck?
You know, Alan Wynne's, obviously he's been there, and that's the easy one. I think, you know, at some stage you have to say he's on the slide.
Yeah.
He still can contribute, but he's not the same player as he was two, three years ago. For me, you know, up front is probably where you look at it. I think across the back line, as good as any side in the Six Nations, up front five, and Ken Owens for me is probably the man that needs to be on the field, step up and get it done. My opinion.
We love Chairman Ken. I was going to say to you, pick us someone who not necessarily has to have, but you think could be a proper breakthrough. A lot of people talk about Tommy Reffel.
Yeah, I think Jack Morgan.
Okay.
I think he's been in great form. He was involved in last year's Six Nations. The back row, potentially, of like Tips, Jack and Toby. So Jack, you know, could really put a marker down. He had an opportunity in the autumn. He went pretty well, and I'm sure he'll be hungry to really cement his spot in that team.
I think with like Talupe, if he plays well, Wales play better.
Yeah.
When he's really singing, he lifts Wales.
He's so. Wales' best player.
But it's interesting when you look at it, like you said, Tipperick, Faletau, Liam Williams, Dan Bigger, Alan Wynne Jones, Ken Owens,
George.
So, you know, George. Mate, there is.
They've been there a while, haven't they?
Yeah, they've all been there a while, but they've all got experience. They're not phased, and actually, if you were to take them out, they all can create moments of magic in different areas. They all have that ability, and that's why I'm a bit like, we've talked down about this Wales side for a long time. Actually, I don't think they're going to be that far off if he can work the magic and they can stay fit and they're not going to be distracted.
Other than the fact that you tipped Italy to beat them 10 minutes ago.
I'm
allowed to do that. I'm now a rugby pundit. It's the Clive Woodward School of Mentality. I can literally just make up whatever I want to do.
Here's one for you, Fox. Wales, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, England, Italy, Wales, France, Wales. Which is the biggest game for your countrymen in this? Is it a case of as long as we beat the English, we don't care? Or is there a game here which you think could define this?
I think first up sets the tone.
Yeah.
Always for the tournament.
There's always a bit of niggle as well with Wales.
With Ireland. Games. Yeah.
But I don't think Ireland have beaten Wales in Cardiff for over 10 years and Six Nations in Cardiff.
Good stuff. He's almost done his research.
I thought I was involved in that game, but we did go on to win the championship that year. So
he's always got a comeback, hasn't he?
Yeah. So either
I did
way,
play the bad one, but
needless to say, if I was involved, Wales do well.
So no, I think, so it hasn't been great hunting ground for Ireland.
2019. That wasn't the Six Nations game.
It was a World Cup, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't come at the king. No, better not miss.
So no, I think...
So you think...
Kind of a small competition.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, friendly. Mm. But no, I think first up is a massive
and
game.
And where are your levels of confidence?
No, as Haas was talking there, like you hear the names that's in that squad and it's so much experience and there's talent as well. I think we'll be in a good spot, like quietly going under the radar is where us Welshmen and like to be.
I can't wait to see who they pick in the back row. I think that's key, particularly for that Irish match, because you really need to match the Irish back row in regards to firepower. And we know Faletau can do that, and Tommy Reffel is an amazing guy over the ball. It's where they pick and around that, if it's Tipperick, if you know what that looks like, Morgan, that back row, it's a back row battle for me in Wales, Ireland.
Rafael would have been at Leicester with you.
Yeah, brought him through.
Are you impressed at how he's kicked on?
Was that you just taking credit then? Yeah, brought him through.
Well, not me, but the academy.
He said, brought him through.
I was watching TV the other day, and I must say, a massive shout out must go to Brett Deacon, who basically did a lot of work with Will Evans and Tommy Rafael, who came through in this same age bracket. And on a weekly basis, he worked with them on their sort of positioning over the ball. And sort of they both got a massive shout out as being like two really great groundhogs. And that was, you know, work that he was doing with from 15, 16, 17 years of age, putting him in the right positions, you know, making them compete. But both those guys were in Leicester's academy when I was there as a coach. I didn't bring either of them through, but I...
on your CV, though, John.
Deeks teach him the left-handed straight through or not?
No,
left-handed hook.
He kept that quite nicely hidden. He hasn't really had that out since his playing days.
So this is what I'm... One of the most underrated... Hook, yeah, go on.
Left hook, right uppercut. Just take your head off its shoulders, devastating. People don't see it coming because everyone fights like linearly. He just comes out of nowhere. You don't even see it. Yeah.
Well, he's southpaw, so he throws a left from his chest. Yeah. That's pretty impressive.
And then Jim Hamilton just pushes you in the bin.
Yeah. I was on a stag.
Me and Foxy were on his stag together.
Yeah.
Were you?
Never met him before. Yeah. Well, I played together. I was invited on his stag by Benji.
Right.
So I was, we had a social in France on the Friday.
Yeah.
And at like 10 o'clock on the Friday night, Benji walks into the pub. And he just had his bicep reattached. And
that's said, what, was that after the machete attack?
No, that was another different thing. Yeah, another story. And he goes, I said, do you want a pint? And he was like, no, I'm off to Ibiza in the morning for a stag do. I was like, all right, who's stag do? And he was like, Brett Deacon. And he said, oh, you should come. There's loads of space. I said, I've never met him before. He sent one message and he said, yeah, plenty of room. So I put my pint down, booked a flight at 10 o'clock at night. And then stayed out till early hours in the morning. And then 6:30, Benji rings me. He says, come on, boy, we're going on the stag. I was like, no chance, no way. I was done. He's like, come on, I need you. So next thing you know, I'm on a plane to Ibiza for the day.
Good addition. Good addition that. To walk into the pool party as you're there and Foxy walks in. You're like, hey, good addition. Nice.
On
good.
We go.
What, little pair of speedos, rig out, looking fire, young face, moisturised for an inch of his life.
Yes, beautiful. Yeah, I think you had a time for a fake tan as well, did you?
Yeah, I got it.
Did you?
You got
fish.
Yeah,
exactly. The bait. Okay, well done on Wales. On to Scotland, fourth in last year's Six Nations, seventh in the world currently in the rankings. Gregor Townsend said it's likely to be his last Six Nations. Couple of injuries, Adam Hastings, Darcy Graham, Scott Cummings and Roy Darge, all a little bit doubtful. Watson and Ferguson in the squad, but recent fitness concerns. Scotland, lead us away. Where are Scotland right now?
Above
Newcastle.
Brilliant. Where is Scotland rugby team right now?
That's the eternal question, isn't it? They show bits of genius. You think they've turned a corner and then, you know, they won their first two games out last year. Everyone's going Grand Slam, lose their last three games. So no doubt they can beat anyone on their day, but still don't have any confidence to back them for a title, which is sad, really, because if you go through their team, I think they're in a really strong place with how strong their squad is. I think that it's, I'd say over the last 3 years, it's been the best squad that Scotland have had for a long time. And would you then say on the back of it, they're underperforming? I think consistency-wise, yes. But I still would always buy a ticket to watch them because when they click, I think they're outstanding to watch.
They've gone really well in the Calcutta Cup recently, and that's obviously I think four of the last five. That's up first. How do you call that coming in? We'll obviously come on to England, but from what you're seeing in Scotland at the moment.
Yeah, Scotland is the biggest conundrum for me. Similarly, you know, for a long time, we've kind of said, to echo what Tins has said, you know, we've gone, this is the year, and then they've let us down. I've been frustrated over my last few years with Scotland for that reason. You know, I've backed them going, you know, they're going to go well and they've consistently let me down. So I'm going to go the opposite way this year and say Scotland are going to let me down. I think, you know, the big game, the first one is pivotal. You know, like Foxy said about Wales, Ireland, that one just gives Scotland confidence if they get there. But I see England winning that. I think Scotland are good for two wins this year and just a couple of the niggles and a couple of the injuries will hurt them. Although their performances at club level and recently have been pretty good.
Yeah. Why have they had the hex on England?
Look, I think there's always been, you know, the old rivalry that everyone talks about. I think just recently, remember there was that game where they came back all the way to a draw.
You were 31-0 up.
Yeah, and came back. Draw. And I just think, again, I think Scotland are a team that was just a flatter to deceive. You know, there's been the talk of this kind of turnaround. I think the faffing around with Finn Russell and that, you know, in and out and selection policies and sort of drama a little bit off the field. I think it's been disjointed. I think, again, you know, for a long period of time, you looked at the Scotland team years ago, it was Patterson was kicking all the goals and then they came in and then, you know, you suddenly got Hogg and then it's Russell and Hogg and then it was Watson, Russell and Hogg and you suddenly started adding more and more players to the squad.
There's a big gap between Patterson and then
Hogg.
It's the only Scotland player he knows.
I'm talking about the point.
Gavin Hastings.
But fine. Gavin Hastings was the player. Chris Kenny Logan.
Very good.
That was it.
Andy Irvine.
Yeah, all right, fine. But it wasn't a massive handful of like superstars that you could sort of talk about. I think they've got a great squad. I think on their day, they can actually beat everyone. I think with England, there's been a niggle for a long time, especially under Eddie Jones, where it was always very physical. Even from our first game, we went to Eddie Murrayfield, and the belief was that Scotland were going to beat us. They genuinely were. You know, we got off the bus, people throwing bottles, all that kind of niggle that went on.
And we ended up filling them in on that particular occasion. But I think that the squad teams are much closer. I think the squad, you know, Scotland squad is very, very good. I think there are some star players. And I don't think the gap now is as big as it was. And I think the mentality behind, say, fans and journalists is that there is a bigger goal than there actually is. And I think Scotland are much closer to England. I think there's that real fire. I think if you asked, I mean, I believe in a Polo got interviewed the other day by somebody and saying the one team want to beat Scotland. I think if you were to ask quite a few of the England players in that team, the one player they've got under their skin who have reeled them back in on a number of occasions probably is Scotland. So look, I just think that hopefully this could be their year. I just think you want them to kick on because you don't want to be the also-rans. If this is Townsend's last Six Nations, probably hasn't quite done what he should have done with the players that he's got, because I think they're probably in the best position they've been other than some of these injuries for a number of years, excluding Patterson, obviously.
But is it that you... Sorry, I was going to ask a question. Is it that you accept it? That, you know, with Finn, you get pure genius, but also you can get a bit of madness thrown in there that then leads to you sort of losing control of games.
Will you answer the question? Would you want to play outside him? I
would still love to play. I'd still love to be outside him.
Quite like Lammy in some ways.
Just someone who can see something that... And if you can learn to read it, and the fact of how close he plays to the line, how happy he is and comfortable, they talk about slowing down sort of time. That's what he does. And I think there's something to say about his mentality and the fact that mistakes, he can brush mistakes off and just next minute he'll do another one. That's why I always say that Scotland I'd buy a ticket to, because...
I think that you pick nines, get the ball in his hands as quickly as you possibly can, fast rocks as Scotland used to, and magic is going to happen.
Would you pick him as a coach though? I mean, as a fan, yes, but as a head coach,
you know,
director of...
context is everything. So I don't know the exact context of what went on in the environment and what sort of Gregor Townsend is trying to achieve.
Yeah.
Obviously, he has felt that in some way Finn Russell has let the team down, because that was the rhetoric coming out of the side. And I think on occasions that needs to be done. So if they have curfews and he's being a ringleader, and I don't know, this is the fact, if there are curfews and the team agree on something and then there's, you know, four or five guys to the side to go for late beers and get a bit loose and come in and they're, you know, not able to train the next day or haven't checked in for physio appointments, you have to draw the line in the sand somewhere. And that's what I think, I'm assuming that Gregor Townsend has done that. The fact that he's sort of got him back into the squad now, you'd hope you'd learn from that lesson. You'd actually say, hold on, I'd rather be in on the inside than on the outside. And you'll see a better performance from him this year and actually take those leadership responsibilities seriously. I don't know. I don't have the detail, but something's gone on. Obviously, to leave a player of his calibre out of the squad, he's seriously pissed him off. So I think hopefully it's you know, you build the relationship and you actually go, what's best for Scottish rugby?
I blame the snitches.
Yeah.
Snitched. Get when they're having a beer.
But Jordan, just to get back to that, would you be comfortable in games of this magnitude and significance and pressure to go with the risk-reward ratio of Finn Russell over, which is high, there's a big gulf between the two relative to a Dan Biggar or an Owen Farrell?
Yeah, but if that's about, you know, the conversations that you have. You know, you want him to play his game, but you want him to be sensible with it. You don't want him just flipping everything out the back door and throwing 50-50s all the time. There has to be an element of make the right decisions for the team. He has to control the team. You're an international 10. Unfortunately, you're not going to win games if your 10 isn't controlling the game. Now, you still want him to play and you still want him to be ambitious and actually to have a crack, but you can't have him playing for himself. It can't be the Finn Russell show. It has to be the Scotland show.
I think he has to put confidence in Gregor Townsend and the boys. Like he can't just say, right, we're picking you, go and do what you want. If he goes like, I understand how we want to play, and boys then get a feeling for that, then they obviously will play for him. They love playing with him. So I think it's like it goes both ways. If Gregor Townsend puts confidence in Finn to come back in the squad, then it has to be going back the other direction.
Finn Russell's been quoted this week basically coming out saying, look, I want to be part of this team for a long time, I want to play really well. I don't know what the exact quote is, but it is something like that. And I think he's the best 10 to lead them on. I think they'll be highly motivated. I think they'll want to kick on. Again, look at the team they've got there. You know, they've got obviously got Hogg, they've got Cameron Redpath who's been not been fit. They've got Dwayne Van der Merwe. You've got McConaughey, who's obviously now found out he's got a Scottish grandparent in the mix. You know, you've got Sam Skinner, you've got Roy Southern, you've got Hamish Watson, you've got Johnny Gray, Richie Gray, Matt, Sander Ferguson. I mean, they're potentially injured, but they've got some incredible players there that can do an absolute job, that have world-class experience. It's now or never to kick on, and they can't be the also-rans. Or equally, the Scottish public, if they win England, beat England, just shut up for 5 minutes. No one tip them to win anything, and then they'll probably just go on and win it. But they don't need the hype, because the hype derails them for some reason, because it seeps into the camp, I think.
Are we going four then for Finn Russell as the one to watch? Would any of you want to throw another name in there? Rory McConachie is a brilliant
player. I said Cameron Redpath if he's fit, because, you know, remember his debut game against... Well, I think, you know...
Tupelotu?
Tupelotu
and Harris.
I think, you know, any sort of combination of those three would be really good for me to see. You know, you stick Russell outside. Tupelotu, I think, is good for Russell because he gives him that really direct edge, you know, to take a little bit of pressure off him, let him play flat to the line, and you know you've got a hard runner there. Chris Harris is a shoe-in, and you bring Redpath on off the bench with 25 to go and just let him run riot. I think, you know, that's when Scotland have their best opportunity.
You went two wins, didn't you? How many wins for Scotland? Into your microphone, please, Michael. It's a podcast.
Sorry, I didn't realise that. I was just saying, they've got three home games, haven't they? I think they've got Italy and Wales at home.
England, Scotland, then they go Scotland, Wales, then they go France, Scotland away, obviously. Yeah, then they go Scotland,
they've got France
Ireland,
and England away and everyone Italy else last. At home, haven't they? So, I think they'll get two... Maybe upset a third.
Interesting.
I mean, I said they were going to lose to Italy, so. But then I changed my mind again. They're going
changing
to be
horse mid-race. All right. Let's move on to England. Steve Borthwick is in, just in case you haven't been following your rugby recently. Eddie Jones has left the building. Kevin Sinfield, Nick Evans and Richard Cockerell making up his coaching panel. Fifth in the world currently, third in last year's Six Nations by the skin of their teeth. Injuries are playing quite a prominent part of it. So Henry Slade, the latest to withdraw from the Calcutta Cup. Elliot Daly is out for 12 weeks. Courtney Law still struggling with bits and bobs. Luke Cowan-Dickie is out with an ankle injury. Jamie George may or may not be fit, having passed his return to play protocol with concussion. And Tom Curry is out with hamstring injury. Lead us off, Hask. A brand new, bright new dawn for English rugby. Yes or no?
I think it's going to be a challenge. I think that only one coach has come in and won a Six Nations in their first year, and that was Eddie Jones.
We're back there again.
No. But I'm just saying, it was interesting. Woodward didn't do it. Robinson didn't do it. Ashton didn't do it. You know, will Borthers break the mould? I think actually, yes. I think he could be capable of doing that. I think his mentality, the coaching staff, the renewed energy. I mean, Maro Itoje came out in the papers this week and said that we probably needed a change. It wasn't good enough, which I think is probably a bold statement, especially from Maro, because he enjoys his time on the middle of the fence. And I think, you know, they're obviously reinvigorated. I think Borthers will do a good job. I think injuries will play a part. But the one thing that England has is a lot of depth. You know, you're transitioning, you know, Henry Slade out and Anthony Watson back in. You know, that's pretty special replacement. Anthony Watson, obviously, you know, his comeback game against for Leicester scored an absolute wonder try. He'll be very frustrated but very excited to be back in the mix. You know, Jamie George coming back in from an injury, again, world-class player, lion. I think England are spoilt for riches. I think all they're missing is motivation, a couple of refreshed game plan, but nothing too over the top, and 2-3% better, and they're going to do very well in the Six Nations. I genuinely believe it, and they'll be reinvigorated, and a new broom sweeps all clean, and I think it'll be quite nice for the you know, reinvigorated Twickenham crowd come next weekend.
Pick me your 10, 12, 13. Please.
Why do I always get it? Foxy, what do you think? I think now, with the loss of Slade, I think you are going to see Marcus Farrell and Manu. I think Lawrence puts his name up. I think he's been playing really well for Bath, but I think they'll go with Tua Lange.
Marchant is another option.
Marchant is another option, but I don't think they're going to go that way. They could just go Lawrence and Manu and just go some beast down the middle, which would worry a few people. But then it all depends about who's going to play those roles at the back and who's your other kicking option. So I don't think they'll do that. But it would be quite nice to see that. It'd be a bit mammoth.
It depends on selection. England's opportunities for me. Smith Farrell doesn't work as a 10-12.
Yeah. Really? Does not work. Because?
It doesn't work. It hasn't worked in any of the big games. Farrell's a 10. For me, he's got the ability to play 12, but for me, he is your first choice 10. And regardless if you have, for me, when you go Manu and Ollie Lawrence, I'm thinking that's going to cause a lot of issues. But what are England going to do? What way are they going to try and play? Well, they're going to have a refined game plan. It's going to be very much towards that Saracens, that Leicester model that was successful the other year. It's going to be box kick, forward dominance, you know, really play that control. And if you're playing that game, you want a really sound defence, which is probably those two boys.
Does Farrell, Manu, and Ollie Lawrence not just like with Nick Evans coming in as your attack coach?
Well, that's why it's a tough one for Nick Evans, obviously, because he's worked with Marcus Smith on a weekly basis, and I know he's on secondment from Quinns, but yeah. It makes it, you know, difficult for him, because I'm sure he will want to pick Marcus Smith. He will, you know, want Marcus Smith to shine and to have, you know, great moments. Marcus Smith, what he does for Harlequins on a weekly basis, I'm blown away by. Absolutely blown away by the way his talent and his skill set. He hasn't really had the opportunity to do that on an international stage just yet. And I don't think it's worked with him and Owen Farrell. And for no reason, that's no criticism of either of them. Just the balance of the way they play. Marcus Smith doesn't look comfortable in that environment, whether that's an international stage or whether that's just having a Faz outside you and that experience, you know, bossing you and taking the ball out of your hands when, you know, you want to just play off the cuff.
The way Eddie was trying to set it up and Eddie was trying to play the last 2 years... My biggest worry over England since that sort of World Cup is their creativity. So they haven't really created opportunities. Yes, they won games. They won that Autumn Nations Cup the first year after, and they got some wins. But they're not. They used to be creating so many opportunities, and that's not happening. And right, is Steve going to come in and go, right, are you going to pick a Jack Van Portfleet? But if you're going to pick someone who's going to play at such a speed, is Faz the right guy to play 10? Or are we going to go back to Ben Youngs and Owen Farrell? And then, you know, yes, you've got 220 caps between them.
For me, the way England played in the last 25 minutes of all of their autumn fixtures is the way they should play the game. You know, really exciting, throwing the ball around. There's obviously cards thrown into that factor, but they actually looked exciting. They got the ball to the edge, and you've got some of the players there. You're looking at that. Ollie Hassel-Collins, hugely exciting. Caden Murney, ball in hand, one-on-one opportunities on the edge. They are going to create, like, real, real danger. Freddie Stewart on the inside of that, you know. It's an exciting side, but again, selection is the key and the balance of the way they want to play.
Yeah, exactly. The style of play is key. If you're going to go kick heavy, run hard, and then you know who they're going to pick. But if you want to play with tempo and a bit of creativity, then it's got to suit as well. You can't pick a certain players because of experience to play a way that they're not comfortable. So it's a big decision, and you'll probably see we'll see now this week.
It's quite shocked. There's quite a few real low cappers in there, obviously surrounded by some really
some
punchy cappers. Yeah, there's, you know what, five on cap, but then you've got Van Poelvliet's got 7, you've got Alex Mitchell's got 1,
Freeman,
Ollie Lawrence has got 7, Dan Kelly's got 1, Tommy Freeman's got 3, you know, Jack Willis 6. You've got lots of really...
Is that a concern with the World Cup 7 months away?
Not really. My thing would be now is finding consistency. Consistency in the selection, consistency in who you want to play. Yes, you can wiggle around with that. You know, 2-3 players can come in and out, but we don't need him to be using 20-30 players, 35 players going through this. You need to be getting consistent an idea.
There's two things, is that just regarding the cap thing. So I remember, as it's Stuart Lancaster, did a kind of review, and to win a World Cup, you needed over...
Something like 1,200, isn't
it? Yeah, no, it was like 800 caps, something like that, across the squad was a number that everyone that ever won a World Cup had over a certain amount of caps. That's why when he was in charge, and he talked about the 2015 World Cup, he was more excited about the 2019, because he said by the time the 2015 squad gets to 2019, they will make a World Cup final. They did. The other thing I want to talk about Jordan might know a bit more about this, Tins, you obviously coached. When you've got to think about this with your business head on, right, not your emotional head on in terms of picking players, is if you're coming in, right, what is it you hang your hat on? Because every team that I've ever worked with where they've had short-term success, so Gatland and Eddie Jones, for example, right, came in and had pretty clear game plans. So Gatland had Warren Ball working your way to the edge, players got their hands on the ball, defence was very aggressive, you know, pretty simplistic in terms of what you would do, motivated by pure emotion. You had your hands on the ball,
and that was a pretty key game plan. When Eddie came in, he said, I'm going to reset back to what England's good at. Good set piece, real physical defence, attack will take care of itself. Emotionally, it's very easy to implement that. And it's very easy for you to be able to review that and go, right, lads, how quickly do you get off the floor? How hard do you hit people? How many times do you get over the gain line? And the play and the flow takes time to build. Now, Steve Borthwick comes in. You talk about style of play. What does Steve Borthwick want to be known as? Well, in the press, he's talking about players getting back on understanding, getting back to where England want to be, emotionally correct. What do you do? Because you can't implement some crazy new attack plan in 2 weeks. What can you hang your hat on, which is probably massive physicality in defence? You've got Kevin Sinfield, probably one of the most emotional leaders the game's seen, does amazing stuff on and off it. What's he going to do? Reinvigorate the lads. So the lads are going to be kicking fuck out of people. That's what they want them to do. And then game plan wise, what do you want people to do? You're going to try to put really intricate moves in? Or has Nick Evans got a remit to get the guys over the game line to create these edges opportunities on the edge and be very, very direct? And I think that, when you've got to understand your first Six Nations, you need simplicity. You need everyone on the scene from the same hymn sheet, low numbers of caps, how they're going to go out and play with some ability to build in some creativity, because that's how you guys would do it. And emotionally, you can. It's very easy to stand in front of a meeting and go, right, lads, simple game plan. These three are targets on the Scotland side. We're going to get after him. You boys are going to go over the game line. This is how we're going to play. We're not going to play too much from our own half. We're going to attack down there. Whenever we get into their 22, the lights come on and we go turbo. And that is an easy way of managing a team. Whereas a lot of people think, oh, they're going to come out with some real good game. You can't manage that in 2 weeks. You can't play that. And I think that will dictate how England will play.
Well, when the lights come on, we're going to go turbo.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about coaching?
No. No, I just don't have the attention to detail. I'm great at top line stuff, great at post-match, great team management. I like
his coaching is just sending another coach's book.
Yeah, very good.
Sorry, Jordan, you were going to add some words.
I think, bang, you hit the nail on the head. I think that's exactly what England will do over the next coming weeks. It actually, interestingly, you know, with the numbers of injuries going up, it's actually the balance of how hard you can train, because you start, you know, getting bangs in training and that sort of starts getting diluted. But looking at that squad, it's really exciting. You know, I think that's the way England will play. They will be physical, they're massively physical, massively forward orientated with that Kevin Sinfield defence, you know, which is going to make it tough for the opposition. It's going to be a huge kicking game, and actually the kicking balance in the back three for England is where, again, where I think needs to be looked at, because, you know, I don't think Cade Murray and Ollie Hassel-Collins are renowned kickers of the ball for any Stewart. You know, there'll be an element of pressure on him to kick the ball. But the flip side of everything, Hask, is that's the way we think England are going to play. The opposition will know that, and they'll be trying to pick that apart as well. So it'll make that those you know, the balance is really fine.
I think as well, when you look at it from a point of view of someone like Borthwick, so Borthwick was born in the fire of an Eddie Jones coaching regime across different countries. He will see, especially with coming into Leicester, you know, to come into Leicester and to change that round in 1 year, and to, yes, they were playing quite creatively by the end of it, but what was their fundamentals? I think Borthwick will go back to the fundamentals to have an understanding of, like, when did England look good? Well, Geordie said, right, the last 20 minutes, what were they doing in the last 20 minutes? Fast ball, getting over the gain line, moving the point of contact, very physical in defence, not playing 50-50s, respecting the ball. So immediately, that's what you're going to see from England, because that's how you could, how they want to play. So I imagine it will be fast and hard, kicking in the right areas, and also, you know, probably playing the percentage a little bit. You know, saying, do we want to be overplaying in our half? Do we want to see that? Probably not against Scotland's side that do have the ability to carve you up. You know, a couple of loose balls, Finn Russell's specialty is fucking getting it wide and playing, or kicking through. Cross field kick. You can't do that. So I think you will see that. And then hopefully, I think the plan will be under Borthwick then to progress, and whether whoever replaces Nick Evans will be to build into that. But I think you don't pick Owen Farrell as captain unless you want him to dictate how things are going to go. True. You know, and ironically, I think you're going to see the same thing from Wales. Just going back to Gatland, you know, what does he implement in a 2 week period? What gives you emotional energy? Big hits over the game line. That's what you hang your hat on. That's when you review it. You go, fucking hell, lads, we did well.
Yeah, that's the, you know, foundation is going to be set, and the values are going to be the physicality and the defence and kicking game probably, and then they'll probably look to add and grow from there with their attacking game.
Knowing both, it'll be like compete on every play. Like, so, you know, the first thing I would say in any meeting was, do we get beaten to any loose ball? No. You know, if there's anything, you know, someone like Courtney Laws is missing, but if there's a long kick, you know, when you look at the analysis, and Scotland are fielding the ball, you want to have five England players in that picture straight away. So on the TV, you're seeing five players swarming. So that'll be the mentality, because that's easy to manage, isn't it?
Basically,
it's a metric.
Because of the physicality we're talking about, we're saying Six Nations is going to be won by yellow and red cards.
Right. No change there then for the last sort of couple of years. Pick me your back row quickly.
Because when
you're talking about like you've got Ben Earl back in, you've obviously
I'd have Earl,
Lewis Ludlam. Would you put Mario into six? I don't know.
Now Sam Simmons
or Alex Dombrand to eight.
I mean, now Courtney was out. I mean, obviously we talked about putting Courtney and Mario in the second row to free up space, and we were going to have Earl, Dombrand, and Willis. Didn't we? We had that, but I don't know. Now he's out. You know, I'd probably keep Mario in the second row, and I'd keep going with Earl.
So you're going Earl, Willis, and Dombrand?
Yeah. Okay. Is what I would do.
Ludlam on the bench.
Ludlam on the bench. Purely because I think when Lewis comes on and he's motivated, he's actually one of the biggest, most destructive tacklers out there. And I think he comes on with that ability to get over the game line and brings real energy. I think Earl and Willis just cause absolute havoc. Both of them good, you know, ball carriers. And Dombrand, you know, just does what he does best.
Quick fire, a player you are intrigued to see in England colours this tournament?
I'll go Hassel Collins, to be fair. I think if they give him ball, I think what London Irish, the way
do you think he'll play?
I don't know. I think he's earned the right to play. I think his strength, I think if you're going to play physical, he is physical. He's hard to stop. He's difficult to tackle. He can beat you on the outside, or he hits that line back through and can step back on the inside and break a tackle and then get an offload away. So I think, you know, he's the things where you never really find out until you're a test player is what positionally, how he's going to be under the high ball in front of 85,000 people, those sort of things. But has he earned the right? I think he has. I think, you know, I love Anthony Watson. I love watching Anthony Watson play. I think he's just an incredible player. But obviously he's coming back from injury. Having watched Ollie Hassel-Collins over the past sort of year, yep. If they can England get quick ball and give him the ball, he'll make stuff happen.
Okay. I'm being a bit stupid, sorry, not for the first time. If you think about Borthers and, again, set piece battle being the key and wanting to get ball and not risking it, I would say looking at it, he's going to go Johnny Hill, he's going to go
Marrow,
and to try to put a bit more height, and obviously Dombrand in the back row, and maybe even I was looking at Dave Ribbons, whether he's, you know,
he's going to pick a line out option.
Yeah, he's going to. Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah,
he's going to pick a line out.
So you're changing your back row now.
Yeah, I'm saying potentially, you know, you might put a Marrow at six and then put
Chesham gallops about at six, doesn't he?
He's played some six, yeah. I think Marrow's a good six. I know there's a huge amount of respect for Ezekiel as well.
Yep.
So I think there's some options there. But I think with Earl and Dombrand, if that is the mix, you need a line-out option, a really thorough line-out option at six.
It is a genuinely intriguing selection that Steve Borthwick will make. Okay, on to Ireland. Second in last year's Six Nations. Ranked number one in the world. Does that sit comfortably with you?
Yeah, very much so. I think they've deserved it over the last while. I think for a very, very long time, you know, it didn't.
Yeah.
And almost sort of being Irish, we kind of said, oh, yeah, you know, we haven't. But, you know, full credit to the team. They deserve to be number one in the world. You know, the amount of times they've beaten New Zealand in the last outings are, I suppose, case in point. First Irish team to go and win a test series there last summer. Playing some fantastic rugby. For me, the Six Nations is probably secondary to what happens later in the year at the World Cup.
Mm. Quarterfinal exit.
Well, we've never made it past the semi-final, and actually it's actually a difficult side of the draw. You know, you're looking at playing South Africa in a pool game, two where you get France or New Zealand in a quarterfinal. Yeah. It's not really that great. I'd rather be on your side, to be quite honest, lads.
Yep.
If Ireland have aspirations to do it, which we do, we have to have a Six Nations. I would like Ireland to just expand the playing pool a small amount in this Six Nations, in saying that, you know, that there's games that you have to go out and win.
Beat Australia 13-10 in November, beat South Africa 19-16. Tell me sort of where you netted out at the end of obviously a long year, a huge year in 2022. Those two narrow wins, does that tell you Ireland are able to eke out games at times when, you know, it's very much in the balance? Or does that tell you that it's all getting quite congested at the top?
No, I think so. I think par for being number one in the world is that teams are bringing their A game to you. I think you look at the Australians who lost to Italy, a very, very different side that played against Italy. And you talked about that respect and, you know, okay, we're on tour, maybe we'll just give these guys a run. The Australia-Ireland game was a test match. The Ireland-South Africa game was a test match. You know, physical, really, really brutal, and it was great to see Ireland, you know, win those games. I think for a long period of time, Irish teams that I was part of, you know, we weren't physical enough. We got bullied by New Zealand. You know, they could drop back into just physically beating you up. Whereas this Irish team has got a huge amount of power. You know, I talk a lot about the back row and what they give you, you know, going over the line. And Ireland have had been very lucky, I suppose. It's been par for what they've done with the amount of back rowers that they've brought through in the Leinster setup, in the Munster setup, and the Ulster setup, that, you know, they can get over the gain line and they can compete with any team in the world now. I think it bodes well for Irish rugby. I think Farrell has done an amazing job when he took over from Joe Schmidt. You know, his first few games, I know, were in COVID, and it was in that the Nations Cup, and you know, there was calls, oh, he's not good enough, and it was, you know, he wanted to expand the way Ireland played. He wanted to play, you know, more a heads up game.
I think a lot of people would have a huge amount of sort of respect for Andy Farrell. I just would love to ask you about Paul O'Connell as well, because I think did he join 12 months ago?
I think a little bit before
just
that.
Just before that, was it?
Yeah. Paulie's
attention. The impact he's had.
Yeah, he's been fantastic. He was away, obviously, learning his trade in Stade Francais with Heineken Meyer, and I know he learnt a lot there and, you know, kind of figured out the coach that he wanted to be. But Paul has been, for anyone who's met him or come across him, you know, he's a really, really intense bloke, great bloke, but attention to detail and a real passion and a pride, you know, about what he wants to do. So definitely, you know, the Irish set piece has been great with him there. You know, they've got a guy, John Fogarty, who does the scrum, who's been really detailed as well. And the forward play has been fantastic.
When you look at this Ireland squad and Ireland's recent results, do you see an Ireland side that is getting better, that is holding its position, or that, I suppose, over the next 7 months is going to do well to stay where it is?
No, I think they're just getting better and better, and that's the scary thing, really. I think when you used to play against Ireland, you used to emphasise, right, we have to match them emotionally going into the game. And if you do that, then you had a far better chance. But their attention to detail and the level of execution, the style of play with the ball in hand, is just that New Zealand test series, some of the stuff they were playing, you know, to say it was against New Zealand was like mind-blowing, really, because they were so accurate, they executed, and they made New Zealand look, you know, pretty average at times. And, you know, that's the detail and level that they're playing at. And I think it goes down to, like, the tackle area, the speed of ball, and everyone understanding their roles and executing. I think it's they're at a point where everyone's just comfortable, and it's almost like they turn up and they know it's business. It's not, they don't need that emotional rise. When they have that, then you're in trouble even more then. So I think they're playing at a level that's worthy of that number one ranking.
I thought Sexton was out. Is he now fit to play?
I think he said he is.
Okay, he is fit to play. When you're opposite Johnny Sexton, you are thinking what? What is the challenge around playing against Sexton?
Punch him in the face, gobby a little shite.
Because obviously you played with him as well. Yeah. I'm just interested, as you know, he so much of Ireland goes through Johnny Sexton, emotionally, tactically. Yeah.
And he's the driver of that detail as well. Like I remember on the Lions tour where he'd expect, if you didn't know your role, he would get into you, and you wouldn't want to do that. It's almost like, you know, how people talk about Sean Edwards, you don't want to make a mistake for Sean Edwards. It was almost like that level with Johnny, because you just knew that if you made a mistake, he'd call you out and make you feel about like that big.
Even though you were man of the series.
You still listen to him though. But no, I think he drives that. And, you know, I think when you play against him, you just got to take his time away. If you stand off, I think when Wales go up against him next week, I think the line speed you'd like to think it would be huge from Wales, just to try and take his time away.
Were you going to add to that? I'm just fascinated in your view on.
No, I think so. I think Johnny's been like that since he's a very, very young player. You know, he came through pretty much out of school into an Irish setup with Ronan O'Gara as probably the first choice Irish 10, and that was Johnny's, you know, MO. He's just saying it as is, and he's really combative and really angry, and he's not shy of throwing a few F-bombs around to his teammates, whoever, because he expects the very, very highest of standards, which is exactly what you want from your 10. He's still doing that. He's not taking it backwards. For me, Johnny is pivotal to Irish hopes and dreams, particularly for the World Cup. I think he's one of the guys I'd like to see, you know, maybe be dragged at 50, 60 minutes regardless. I think Ross Byrne's a fantastic 10. I think Jack Crowley's done a great job in sort of the emerging Ireland trip to South Africa, and he did a great job against Australia. So there's some nice options there and nice opportunities to give guys a little bit of game time if things are going well. But you know, it's I think it's a great Irish squad. I think there's some fantastic. Robbie Henshaw is missed. Yeah. I think he's a fantastic player. But Bundy Aki obviously can come in and do a job. I think those two young Jimmy O'Brien and Jamie Osborne, both young kids from my local club. It would be nice to see them going. Particularly Jamie Osborne, as you call him a kid, he's a giant of a man. But again, his performances for Leinster have been hugely impressive. Anywhere really in the outside backs. So it'd be nice to see some guys like that get some field time as well.
I was just laughing because you talk about Johnny as F bombs, and actually everywhere we go. I mean, I'm not sure Netflix are going to know what's hit them.
It's going to be
X-directory before beeping. You know it. You had a lot to say about Ireland, not recently necessarily, but where are your love levels?
No,
where
always been positive, I think.
Well, it's not always been positive.
No, since Schmidt left, it's been generally, well, actually it took about a year for Faz, Catty, Paulie, all the guys who have to come through. But now the nuts and bolts that they built under Schmidt that got them to number one previously, got them those wins against the All Blacks, but was very one-dimensional. It was all about eking out penalties, getting in the right area of the field, and then making your forwards get you over the ball. They still have that because it's a very similar squad to what they've always had. But now, you know, they've been, whether it's Catty or whoever, they've been given the confidence to go and allow their back three, who are, we've always said, one full, but we want to see more with the ball in hand, and now they're doing it. And I think with the quality that they have, you know, I know Robbie Henshaw's not in there, but Bundy Aki, Gary Ringrose, you know, with those guys, they can exploit people, and their efficiency around the ruck, they generate really fast ball. And when you generate fast ball, your defences are under a lot of pressure, and they're now maximising that, and they're using it to their advantage. Where, before a couple of years ago, they didn't do that. They stuck to a very, very rigid routine, and they've loosened it off, and it's really worked for them, and they're great to watch.
I mean, look, it's pretty indicative how well they're playing when, you know, Josh van der Vleer is it World Player of the Year or European Player, World Player of the Year, whatever it was, you know, back row player absolutely carving up. You know, that's again the nuts and bolts. I think, you know, when you look at that coaching team, they've all got some pretty standout people with great personalities that are probably emotionally drive the team very well, have that attention to detail, are all super competitive. I think Ireland are in a great place. I think that, you know, they deserve to be number one in the world. I'd say, putting, you know, my hat in the ring, and I know nothing about anything, I'd say they're 100% favourites to win the Six Nations. I know France is there, but I just think they probably have a slightly more, with a bit more experience. But the issue is what Geordie says, that, you know, Johnny Sexton's pivotal. If he falls down, those other guys have had not that much exposure, and I think you're right, they've got to start earning that, because Johnny's not going to be around for ages, you know, for a long time, you know, not forever, and obviously he wants to get to the World Cup, but he has had a few issues, and I know he is a resilient player, and actually I think probably some of his issues are overstated, but they're going to have to find a plan B if he isn't there, because everything runs through him, you know?
They've got three away games, but they've got the two that they need to beat at home. They've got France at home, and they've got England at home. So, and it finishes hopefully with it could be a Grand Slam game for them against England.
Sorry, you're going to add?
No, I just think that they're the biggest, obviously, games for Ireland, the home games. They'll be looking with one eye at France at the World Cup, and obviously sort of the belief factor and trying to put a little bit of doubt in French minds, you know, from that home fixture. And that England game, England will be, I'm sure, gunning for higher honours in the competition. I think that could be, again, really exciting weekend.
I feel so much of it comes down to the first game, Wales against Ireland. I mean, you hear it every year, don't you? Win your first game and then you're off and running. Pick me someone, Jordan, we're sort of picking out players as we go, but someone to write the headlines on the back pages for Ireland, this Six Nations. You can go obvious, you can go Sexton. Someone like a Caelan Doris.
Doris for me.
Really?
Fantastic player.
It's just amazing.
Joss van der Vleer is a fantastic back rower. I think, you know, the Irish back row there, you know, regardless of who you have, are going to compete. James Ryan has been very, very good. You've got, you know, Jordan Lammer is probably someone who I'm a huge fan of. I don't know exactly how he fits into the team, but I just love when he gets the ball. He's just such a threat. He's so elusive. You know,
with Jim, Austin Healey vibe, isn't it? Where he just sort of work out where he put him in with that kind of destructive, like, footwork, and does things you just can't imagine.
He can play fullback. He's a winger, but, you know, you've got some pretty impressive wingers there who've held the shirts down just before him. But when he gets opportunities, he'll score tries. He's an exciting player. But I think again, you're probably looking at sort of those 8, 9, 10 that position in Jemison Gibson Park has been sort of fantastic for him. I'd like to see him keep that form.
Okay, we'll come to sort of final predictions in a moment or two. Vive la France, Grand Slam champions in last year's Six Nations, and actually that game against England as well. One of the best atmospheres we've been in for a long, long time. Number two in the world currently, Fabien Galthié obviously leading things up with manager Rafael Ibanez. Sean Edwards looking after defence, and Jerome Garcés is the in-house referee. So obviously discipline a big thing for the French right now. DuPont, obviously their skipper, beat Japan in the summer, which wasn't, I think, a great learning experience. And in November, beat Japan, beat South Africa, and beat Australia. Can they do it again?
I think this is a fantastic French team. I think arguably you would say people will pick them as number one in the world, you know, and on merit as well. They have the ability to play anyway, which has been rare for France over recent years. But what they've got with DuPont, well, the pack that they've got, they can take you on physically, they can just dominate you, but then obviously with the talent that they have in that back line, they can air it out and they can win anyway. And then with DuPont, they've got the Mercurial, and even you could even go that way with Entomac or Jalibert, whoever they pick. So they have the nuts about them. If you look at their depth, I mean, the depth of the forward pack, they've, you know, you go through the 10, 12 that you think could easily be starters. So they have three home games, but they have the two big teams away. They've got England away and they've got Ireland away. So
can they do both of those?
That you know, we've said they beat Ireland 2 years ago away, didn't they? Which we always said was going to be a massive test of where they are, and then obviously that red card probably scuppered their Grand Slam that year. So yeah, I think they can go there. I think that's a huge battle for confidence going forward. Later, like what Georgie just said about Ireland, I'm really excited for. I am actually really excited for this Six Nations. I think it's, you know, it could pan out to be a cracker. You've just got key games that have bigger repercussions than just Six Nations as well in terms of further down the line. And I just hope the standard rugby is to the level that we're all expecting.
Fox, what do you see when you look at this French squad, their recent results, Sean in there as well? Are they still a side, much like Ireland, are they still a side on the up? Or does some of those results in November just begin to indicate, I mean, they were squeaky bum time against both South Africa and Australia at home?
Yeah, I think they creaked a bit against South Africa. But for me, it's there might be Dompty.
We've just applauded Ireland for squeaking out a 1916 win.
Same question, though, isn't
fucking
it?
They beat them by 30-26.
Sorry, once you finish a full stop at the sentence, what you said before, is it disregarded and then starts again? I'm not made accountable for what I said 10 minutes ago. That was ended. That never happened.
But now we move on. Same question. The question was,
they won a Grand Slam. They smashed Japan in Japan with a third team. And they won all three games in the autumn.
Yeah.
And the only reason they're not number one in the world is because everyone else played four games.
So, but the question to Jordan was, Ireland's November, does that indicate a side going up, staying the same, or declining? And the question to John Fox was, are France going up, going the same, or declining?
I think they creaked a bit against South Africa, although they did
Thank
win.
You. Please finish your sentence, Jonathan.
But I think all those young core group that started 3 years ago or around 2019, 2020, they've all gained so much more experience. And I think they'll look to repeat of what they did last year and going into a home World Cup. I think the thing for me is whether they can handle the pressure they expect in France.
I think that's a really interesting point.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Eddie Jones said when we did our thing with him the other day. He said that the France are the ones now. It's the next tournament is going to be absolutely fascinating as what's happening in September, October begins to get into the head.
He said they're one dead leg away from not being a good side. It's basically what he said. What he said. He said DuPont goes down, then the wheels come off. Now I'm not saying that. I mean, DuPont is unbelievable, and the older he gets, the more he plays. I mean, he's aging pretty rapidly. Have you seen what he looked like before? That's what happens when you straight truck over top of people and make massive tackles. But I think the implication was that obviously he's such a key component. If you take him out, you know, do they have that same go forward, that same belief, that same sort of X factor? I think, bizarrely, France are the converse of what we say about Scotland and Italy. You know, they've always had superstars.
Yeah.
But it was, the problem was, trying to get all the superstars to play together, keep them, the emotional, you know, emotion together, and play in the right way. And actually, I think they've completely done that. I think, you know, the old belief system's gone out of the way. I think they can beat anyone. I think they're ruthless. I don't think they've got any madness in them. I just think, you know, red card, and you said we'll dictate it. I think they're very, very exciting. And I think the best thing about it is they're massive.
Yeah, they're the size of that pack.
Size. They've got skills. They've got offload. And I think, yeah, and I think they're offer something different than Ireland, whereas Ireland, I feel, are slightly older, slightly more mature, potentially slightly more ruthless. But France, if you look at it on paper, they're the side that you go, we want to see them absolutely tear up, because they've got the ability to unlock everything and do shit that no other side can do. And I've always said, I thought French players versus any other team in the world were probably the best players in the world. They just could never get the shit together to do it. I think now they are, and what they can do is next level.
I don't think they're good enough to beat both England and Ireland away.
Because?
Mentality. I know they've worked a lot on it, but I just still think they'll face a very different England and Twickenham with that sort of preparation and that level of detail that sort of we know that England will put in. And that physicality, that will be a great game to watch. That's going to be fireworks.
Don't think it'll be a kicking fest?
There'll be an element of kicking in it, yeah. I think there'll be a huge element of that, but I think there's beauty in that as well, Foxy. Yeah, it's like watching chess.
Yeah. You mentioned the kicking thing, right? This is, again, something people talk about. At the moment, the sides that kick most in world rugby win.
Yeah.
It's been like that for a very long time.
Yeah, people don't talk about that. People go, you kick too much. Like
New Zealand with a key in that. They kick more than anyone, but no one thought they'd ever kick.
Yeah, that was the point. That's what Eddie Jones always used to go on about it. And after the games, everyone used to level the criticism. And he was like, we didn't kick as much as the opposition, and the team that kicks more wins.
I think that's because it's a defensively minded game at the minute. You know, I think the danger is all around attacking breakdowns in relation to yellow cards and contacts with heads at breakdown time. So it's actually, if you're not getting really dominant carries and getting over the gain line, so you're getting quick ball, you're better off kicking it. And the stats are showing that. So if a defence can make a dominant tackle, you're better off not having it. You're better off playing territory. That's kind of been very much par for the course for a long time, you know. And I think that's one of the things that you look at some of the teams who are playing fantastic rugby in New Zealand when they're going well. Even Leinster, you know, when they're playing well, they kick, but they kick at the right time. So they'll kick on edges. They've got the skill set to move the ball 3-4 passes, manipulate the backfield, and then put the ball in. And the more the ball bounces in opposition territory and the opposition 22, the more likely you are to score points. So that's where the game's at. Until the laws in around the breakdown, which, don't get me started, that's another 20 minutes then, are actually sorted out, and referees and the IRB start refereeing people being in control of their body weight.
Can you paraphrase what you want to see in 3 points?
The law for me on the breakdown says you must be in control of your body weight. So when you go to a jackal position, you have to be able to not put your hands past on the floor. Yeah. You have to be able to control your body weight. However, I look at every game, every weekend.
Never happens.
People never do that, which makes it difficult because people are lying over their hands on the ground or hands on the ball. And then where can you clean that out? If Hask is over this table with his hands on the floor and I'm coming to a breakdown, how can I physically clean him out without hitting him in the head? It's impossible. I'm better off kicking it 3 phases ago so I don't have to go to that situation.
His head or the ball?
Well, if the ball is at the backside of that table, yeah, and Hask bends over and he's on his
feet. That's where you lost me.
If Hask is controlling his body weight and he's on his feet, it gives me a target area to get underneath him.
Yeah.
If Hask's feet are back here at the sofa and he's long and his head is a foot off the floor beside the ball, there's no possible way that I can clean him out without hitting his head.
Right. I always knew I liked Geordie.
Yeah, also, the laws.
Best law change. You've got to come back. You've got to stand over the tackle player before you can go for the ball.
Like the big step?
Yep.
Back in the days of the high-tech boots.
Creates 3 points of clearing out, and it'll take away all the head things.
Pick us a Frenchman, and then we'll do a championship winner.
Without saying Dupont.
Without saying Dupont.
Or Antoine. McAlew.
He's Pinot, a hell of an athlete.
Mate, that's what I mean.
I love Pinot, Jaminet, I love, but then I love watching Julien Marchand, Jelonge.
You just basically go through the squad. Well, no. Pick me a player that you're really... Because what people
okay,
will watch
well,
this
I'll always
and listen
pick,
to
I'll
this.
Always pick a back then, and okay. I'll always pick Pinot because I think he's here. Damien I think his skill set is just exceptional.
I can remember watching his dad play. That's depressing how old I am. Geordie?
Gregory Aldred.
Yes.
I think he's a machine, unsung hero. I love an unsung hero, and I just think he gets through so much work. I just love watching him play.
John Fox.
If he plays Moefana.
Yes. Have you played against him?
I think so. Yes.
like, it's like tackling a ball of rubber bands type thing. You can't manage to pin him down.
He's a bit of a block, yeah. Yeah. And, I think, was he at Bordeaux?
Yeah, I think he was.
Yeah, I think I played against Bordeaux. Yeah, no, he's a good player. And I think he played on the wing a bit last year, but if Dante's injured, he might get...
Versatile. Last one.
McAlou.
Love it.
Unit.
Lovely. The winner of the 2023 Guinness Six Nations will be...
Rugby.
I am going to go France.
Are you?
Yep. Ireland.
Wales.
Oh, come on.
What?
Are you rich? Do you genuinely believe
that? Gatland might be watching.
Wales online. Jonathan Davis, back Wales to beat everybody.
Pick me.
Faith restored. Well, pick me, Gatland.
Yeah. Well, I might say that Wales online are going to do an article, aren't they? No, I do think that like
Davis slams average Gatland.
This is now your new thing.
I'm a flat earther. I'm going to say that.
Yeah, flat earther.
Yeah, I do. I think with
if it wasn't Wales, who would you then?
The monarchy's run by lizards, says Davis in upset.
I think Ireland obviously are the ones to beat.
And Wales will do just that.
We'll do that on Saturday.
First game.
Go on.
I think France are going to win it.
Do
no, I don't actually. I think Ireland are going to win it. Actually, I think France. Ireland, France. Ireland. Frylands. Ireland. France.
I think Ireland. That. That's going to go really nicely on our predictions.
I don't know.
What's that?
You said England earlier on.
Yeah, honestly, I don't remember what I said. Please. If you're really impressed by what I said, that's what I meant. If I got it wrong, then that wasn't what I said. But if I got it right, that's exactly what I meant.
Good. Take out of that what you will. Yeah. Help yourself to any predictions. Right, now we've got a new game to play in this year's Six Nations. Listen up, everybody. One that we'd love you to get involved with, Mystic Mike's Predictions. In partnership with our old friends, our dear friends and our good friends at City Index, one of the leading providers of tax and commission-free spread betting across thousands of financial markets. Very nice to have them back on board for this year's Six Nations. Tins, drum roll, over to you. Wales
sure
against
that exciting.
He's behind a cat and a dog.
Yeah, yeah.
What?
We had Bertie the predictor, then the octopus, then a cat, then Elmer's cat. Now we've got Tindall.
Right, yeah.
Similar Tins. Level. What's below? What's lower than a dog? A Tindall, apparently.
Mites. Tins, over to you. We've got Wales, Ireland, England, Scotland, and Italy, France this weekend. Who is getting your backing and why?
I'm going to keep this quite quick. For the Wales versus Ireland, I have gone Ireland to win, and I've gone for them to win by 12.
Would you like to be doing this for real now, or you've had to pick your picks earlier before we've managed to actually bounce it? Are you still comfortable with Ireland by 12 in the cauldron of Cardiff and the Gatland bounce back ability factor?
I'm not happy about the fact that he's pulled out that they haven't beaten Wales in Wales for 9 years. I'll be honest with you,
I
might have dropped
Mike.
The points a little bit. Looking at if Ireland are to be considered properly and as number one in the world, they should be going and doing a job on Wales. That's my belief. Okay. England versus Scotland. I've got England to win by 8. That's a bit more than what I actually started with. I started by 5, but I've gone with 8. But then saying, Scotland, I'm actually going against what form should tell you, because Scotland have won 4 out of 5.
Yeah.
And seem to have England's...
5 in 50 at Twickenham, though. Scotland have won.
Yeah.
So that backs you up.
Taking the fact that both is coming in, it's going to give them a bit more direction. I think there's going to be a bit more freedom in players. So I'm going with England by 8. And then Italy versus France. I've gone France to win by 18. I think I could have gone more than that, but I'm hopeful that Italy will turn up that first game at home and try and lay down some markers, but France will just be too classy.
Two big away wins and England in the Calcutta Cup.
Yeah. But if everyone wants to join in, there is obviously a competition. Whether you agree with me or disagree, just be kind. I'm a nice guy, really. Some might disagree. But if you do want to take part, head over to superbrew.com/GBR and join in on the Superbrew app.
superbrew.com/GBR. Thank you very much indeed to City Index. Good to have you on board for our Six Nations Predictor game. Tins, I think it's fair to say, has gone bold in week one. That is it for this week's show for our Six Nations preview. Jordan, thank you very much. Are you going to the game in Cardiff this weekend?
I am.
You are? Working? Watching? Yeah, jacket padding?
Socialising.
Corporate. Very nice. Are you there or are you on the sofa with your calf up?
I'll be there trying to...
he's off abroad somewhere.
Get some attention.
Are you? Gats, yeah, I'm here. Yeah. Gats, how are you?
Get a free holiday. No, not like that. He's trying to get a free holiday.
Davis, he's sorry, price injury for cash.
We're all at Twickenham.
Yeah,
yes, we are at Twickenham.
Excellent.
God, it's going to be a ripper. It is going to be a very, very exciting few weeks. It's the tournament that gets us through the tail end of winter. And let's hope we're in for an absolute belter. Thank you for joining us once again. If you'd like more of the silly and less of the rugby, it says, head over to Apple Podcasts and sign up to listen to our extra pod, which is the lock-in, just for those who want it. Don't worry too much about it if you don't. Merch on the website for the super fans, as always, and keep your eyes peeled for an episode of GSR this Thursday. Thank you very much indeed once again for joining. GBNR is produced by Shara Kilgallen and is a Folding Pocket production. Enjoy your rugby this weekend. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Good, Yay, The Bad, and The Rugby, Oof, with Alex Payne, James Haskell and Mike Tyndall. Thanks for listening.